Diet Coke. I have many wonders. That's right, fans. You've been webbed up by us and thrown in the trunk as we speed away at 65 miles per hour. This is the Spectacular Webs Podcast. Of course, I am your spectacular host, Thomas Mattis. Yeah, show me your love. That's right. And of course, I'm here with my partner in crime, Donna Mark. Donna Mark, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, man. How's it going?
How is it going? Today, we will be covering episode 10, which is entitled Persona.
Episode now, we... 9?
I thought it was episode 10.
No, I'm looking at it right now because... Actually, I'm sorry. You're right. It is episode 10 because the last one was episode 9.
See, trying to throw me off is just not going to work, Don.
Because I'm looking at the Toon Zone page and it has it listed as episode 9, but that's its problem.
Yeah. So we did not get any email or iTunes reviews, so we're going to go right into the episode recap. Don, if you'll give us that.
All right, that's episode 10, not 9, called Persona. As we will mention, this episode features several new players. So, the antagonist is the Chameleon, with his partners in crime, Quentin Beck and Finest Mason. And most notably, this introduces the Black Cat. So, it starts off, Peter Parker. Oh, yes. Peter Parker runs home to check out news footage of the extraterrestrial ooze that attached itself to John Jameson's shuttle in the last episode. We find out that it is being tested in Dr. Connor's lab, so Peter thinks that, hey, I'm in, but Eddie Brock says, no, you're not, because, due to the emissions of episode 3. Peter figures he can, at least swing by a Spider-Man and take some pictures from the skylight. But as he does so, he sees a silver-haired, shapely vixen with a mask breaking in to steal the oop for herself and sell to the highest bidder. And as he will eventually find out, she is called the Black Cat. The Spider-Man tries to stop her, and the two kind of, have a tumble until glass breaks, which sets off the alarm, and the ooze is set free. Dr. Connors runs in, it's like, what's going on? So Black Cat leaves, and Spider-Man chases her, unbeknownst to him, the ooze attaches it to his boots. So he loses it by this point. And, the symbiote is gotten away as well. Peter goes into the Daily Bugle the next day, demanding to know why that was Spider-Man blamed, since he was trying to help. And Jameson states that Connors just found the thing missing. And Peter's like, well, Connors was there last night, so why is he trying to set me up? And then we find out that Connors is actually the Chameleon. Sakura Baloo. Yes, the Chameleon.
Voiced by Steve Bloom.
Oh, yes. The same guy who voices the news anchor and the Green Goblin.
Yep.
Yeah, so the Chameleon is in town, trying to steal things for the highest bidder. And with him are two cohorts which have correlations to Spider-Man history themselves. Finest Mason, who is known as the Tinkerer. And Quentin Beck, who is known as... that was such an obscure villain. What was that guy named again, Thomas? Do you know?
Some, small-town villain that I think appeared in one episode called Mysterio. I don't think anything ever happened of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think he had, a fishbowl for a head, but I don't remember.
So, not important.
With that bit of foreshadowing out of the way, we see Spider-Man swinging along trying to figure out how he's going to reclaim his glory. And unbeknownst to him, which I kind of call into question, the symbiote gets all over his costume and changes his costume into all black. He doesn't really notice this until Black Cat points it out as she finds him on top of a building. And he's like, what the heck's going on? So she's like, oh, that's cute. You're homaging yourself to me. And as he's swinging around, he finds out that his powers have increased. He's stronger and he's more agile. And he ends up saving a plane from catastrophe into... a familiar setting, which I'll get into later in the analysis. At the same time, the Chameleon has decided to go from robbing banks as disguised as Spider-Man, and with Mason and Beck at his side, they are pretty much picking the town dry. Peter, once Spider-Man gets a hold of this, he and Black Cat decide to stop him for himself, stop the Chameleon for himself and clear his name. So they track him down to. A party being held on a yacht, which includes J. Jonah Jameson, Captain Stacy, and curiously Norman Osborn. But Sakura Bird, it's not Norman Osborn. It's the Chameleon again, who has picked the Yacht as his next target. He disguises himself as Spider-Man once again and starts picking everybody clean until the real Spider-Man, dressed in all black, picks a fight with him. As Black Cat takes out Beck and Mason, Spider-Man eventually takes down the Chameleon and sets his name clear. He's about to tell Captain Stacy what happened to the symbiote, but he, quote-unquote, he decides that it would be better to keep it so we can save more people. As the episode ends, Spider-Man asks why exactly the Black Cat helped him, and she's like, oh, you don't know? And plants a big wet one on his lips as it's revealed that she took the coveted necklace that the mayor had at the time. As Peter wonders what to do about this, we have a dark foreshadowing about the symbiote's true intentions for later episodes. The end.
I love this episode. I love this episode. I love this episode. I love this episode. God, I love this episode. Donnie, can I just tell you one thing?
I can't imagine what it will be.
I love this episode.
Yeah. Surprising, ain't it, folks?
Gee, what a shock.
I like this episode. I like it a lot. But as you heard before, Thomas loves this episode. So I was surprised he didn't do the recap himself. But, you know, I'm going to let you go free reign and you just gush about how much I love
Black Cat. Well, we'll get into that. Let's not act like you don't like Black Cat either.
Oh no, I like Black Cat fine. I actually
unless that purr that you gave at the end of the episode or last episode was lying, because I do believe you were purring when I said her name.
I don't remember.
Better be careful. You're gonna make Liz Allen jealous.
And we wouldn't want that.
No, we wouldn't. So, we will start off with music. I know Don doesn't pay the music, so...
No.
We'll get into that. Actually, before we get into that, did you notice the little movie reference?
Oh, crap, another one? Well, no, what was that? The design of the costume, you mean?
Yeah, when he goes underneath and he looks himself in the building because it's reflective.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, that was in the movie, but that was first time on the 90s show, so I think I kind of blocked that out. But technically, it is a movie reference. So, well, I mean, I have a bigger problem with the actual suit design, but yeah, that is.
We'll get into that. So, like I said, we'll get into music, and really, the only theme of notice was the Black Cat Spidey theme because. There really wasn't a theme for him being in the suit. We'll get into that next episode. But yeah, it did feel sort of like a spy theme. It had those subtle undertones that, you know, you might hear in a spy theme. I mean, it was like another version of sort of the theme that you hear throughout Spectacular Spider-Man. Da, 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 da. But, you know,
Now that you mention that, I did kind of remember that.
So It sort of had that sort of subtle undertones, and it was very soft, and had those sort of spy musical themes in there. So I thought that was pretty cool.
That's nice.
Let's move on to animation. Let's talk about Spidey's black suit, which, from the sounds of it, Don has an issue with.
Well, okay. when I first saw this, obviously this episode came out in 2008, 1 year after Spider-Man 3 came out. And for the record, I like Spider-Man 3, but it obviously has its big problems. But I just thought that
Peter Parker getting jiggy with it montage.
I actually have more problems with Sandman shooting on football. Well, never mind. But the thing we've talked about before, how like they love to like just junk on the movies, especially back in the Dr. Octopus episode. And when when I first saw this costume, because I thought in the Spider-Man 3, it was the most like creatively bankrupt, unimaginative thing to just, oh, let's just make Spider-Man's costume all black instead of actually doing the one from the comics where it was like literally all black with a giant white spider, to just make his costume go from just like a color palette swap kind of annoyed me. And to see it here, I was really kind of annoyed. But I will say that I do like how they do it because it makes sense later down the episode, how it becomes, because it eventually does become the comics version of the costume. So I can't say I don't like it because I like how it how it progresses. But yeah, on first sighting, I didn't like it. But what did you think?
I love the suit design. I just paused there because I said and I'm trying to stop myself from saying Have I said the word enough? But you know, I really didn't notice the swap design or it just being a sort of change in the color palette. To me, it just looked like a black costume with a white spider on it, which is sort of, to me was, for all I knew, which again, what the hell do I know? But
well, no, you know the difference between this one and the one from the comics. Like this one has webs on it, and that one literally is like all black with a giant spider in the front and the back. This one is basically like you can even see the design marks of this costume, but they're just colored black, like the belt and the boots and the spider on the back.
But I have a question: does that really make a difference?
It isn't. Well, to me, I thought that initially this is me back in 2008. To me, I thought that it was like, you know, come on, you can't just put a little more thought into the design. You just have to just color it black. Like basically you take a black crayon and just like color a Spider-Man picture black. To me, that's what it looked like on first notice.
I really don't see a difference.
Okay.
I mean, between this, the movie version, and the comic version that first came out all the way in the, what was it, mid, late 80s?
Like 84, I think.
I really don't see a difference between either of them. I think they all look cool, personally. I mean, I love the design of it. So, with that, let's talk about Black Cat's design, because this is definitely taking many different eras of the Black Cat design into account, I think.
Yeah. well, it's interesting because, like, the current Black Cat costume is different from the original one she had. I mean, I'm talking about the comics.
Yeah.
But it's a little subtly different. It had more drastic changes in the 80s and 90s, but,
Please, let's not talk about that 90s one. As much as I like Black Cat, the one that she wore in her miniseries was awful.
Wait, the one, like, you didn't like the one in the 90s where she had, like the big V down her belly button? You didn't like that?
I thought it was awful. Visually, wow. I thought it was awful.
Wow.
See, you learn something about me every day, don't you?
You sure do.
Well, I know you expect me to be pervert to the end, but I do have some sympathy.
Color me shocked. Well, what are you talking about? Oh my god. Well, what did you think about this one's design? Because I think this one is like it's mostly kind of done after her first one, but the fact that she has black like black hand gloves and black foot boots are I think a nod to like the current design, and it's more bluish than just straight up black. What'd you think?
Well, I was actually thinking maybe more a late 80s, because when did Tinker first start giving her equipment? Was it the late 80s? I'm sorry, I'm putting you on the spot.
No. I thought it was the, It was sometime in the 80s, I know that, because she first appeared like in the late 70s, so it would have happened in the 80s.
Well, and the reason I say that is, yeah, I agree with you. Partly. See, this is why you don't have Diet Coke during the show.
That was a bad idea.
Yeah. For a joke, that was a bad idea. But, as one who has a trade that chronicles her first three appearances, it definitely has a lot in common with her original outfit that she first had when she first was introduced into the book. And at the same time, I feel designs, you know, the nails and sort of the equipment is more like what her suit was in the late 80s when she got her toys from Tinker.
Okay. I actually didn't really notice any of that. Like the goggles she had and the cat claw grappling hook.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, her design, I find it funny because her design, actually, because we all in the comics, like especially currently, she's drawn to be like this uber sexy, like, you know, like knockout girl.
You're gonna force me into talking about the current continuity, aren't you? I hate you.
Yes, I am. Well, I'm trying to make a very intelligent point. But I mean, I think that this design, it's not a bad design, but it doesn't really like shout out, you know, super attractive to me. And I can kind of see because Spider-Man's like, whoa, look at this. but it's not. It doesn't go against the design, the general design of the show. You know, like she has like the really big eyes, and her suit isn't like super revealing. I think that she's certainly attractive, but I don't think that they like kind of like went. I don't think they overdid it, and a lot of her sexuality, her attractiveness comes through her actions and her voice, which we'll get into. But I like how
you think.
I do think.
We're going to be talking about an actress that made Shag go weak at the knees. And when you make the Shagster go weak at the knees, that's when you know you're sexy.
The irredeemable Shag.
Which you can find on his blog.
Once Upon a Geek.
Yeah, so go check Shag out at his onceuponageek.com blog. Because we're whores like that.
What do you mean we?
You keep going.
Move on now, for Christ's sake.
Let's talk about the chameleon design.
This is like the rhino. It's basically the one from the comics. And apparently, like unlike the 90s show, this one is more like the comics because all he had was the white mask. He didn't have like a costume or anything. So, and curiously enough, this one, I don't remember any other cartoon appearance from the chameleon where he spoke. I think he may have been in another cartoon, but I can't remember off the top of my head. But this one has a Russian accent, which is a surefire nod to the comic book history. And I thought that was very interesting.
Well, it's Steve Bloom. What do you expect?
But I don't expect a Russian accent, but that was kind of cool for him to do.
But it seemed great from my point of view. You know, again, Chameleon is one of those characters I don't know much about. Really not up there on my list of villains that I know much about outside of a few things here and there and the unfortunate what he's famous for recently. That little controversy.
What are you...
60...
Oh, my God.
we're not going to say the name of that type of activity.
VLR, that's all I'll say. But I will say really quickly that did you notice like the difference in his when the chameleon was disguised as Spider? Oh, I guess they say it, but when he's a Spider-Man, he's significantly like not significantly, but he's slightly taller and slightly more muscular, and I really like that because I thought
and
that was
also more cheesy because I find that funny as all of Spider-Man's catch themes that we know him for. Spider senses are tingling.
My insect early warning systems are tingling.
You know, he's the one who says that. If you actually notice that through the animation, through all the episodes that we're going to watch, Spider-Man never says spider senses are tingling or any of the other sort of, I don't want to call them cheesy, but sort of classic lines that Spider-Man is known for.
Well, I'm pretty sure in the first episode he thought it to himself, but he doesn't say it out loud like an idiot.
But with that being said, let's talk about our final point with animation. Let's talk about the chameleon spider boat chase. I thought it was very dynamic, especially some of the first-person views.
I liked it. I will say, I watched this last night, and it was really late, so this might have been just me being tired, but I thought it was a little padded. Like there, because after I think there's like a 30-second stretch of them just him right on the boat and Spider-Man chasing after him. But I think the animation all around was really nice. Like especially when Black Cat spies him as Spider-Man unmasked the chameleon, and you see that kind of like foggy haze, like the soft focus. Yeah. I thought the animation in general in this episode was really nice.
But it was just a dynamic fight scene. Again, some of the first-person shots, you know, it felt like you were on water. Like you were, like, on a pair of water skis.
Nah, I didn't. it was nice, though. I'm not going to, like, detract it.
Well, let's move on to the story. And as we talk about when we have new characters, we talk about similarities and differences. And so since we have three new characters, five if you include the black suit and Beck and Tinker. So let's first start off by talking about the black suit and similarities and differences between this one and the one in the comics. You want to go first, Don?
Well, since you didn't notice it, Yeah, I mean, like, anybody who's seen Spider-Man 3 will know the difference, because this is exactly... And this episode, the black costume, the symbiote suit, is exactly the same as it is in Spider-Man 3. And that is that the design is exactly the same from the original Steve Ditko red and blue design, but it's colored black. And to me, that sucks. But in terms, in the context of the story, I'm not going to follow it because it does lead to somewhere. But, I mean, the original comic design was so cool because it was so different. Like, it was basically like a black and naked Spider-Man with a white... with a white bug on his chest and back, and I thought that was radically different from like the web pattern design of the original costume. So with this one, its coloring black is kind of and you notice that, like, I think that they're in this cartoon, the eyes are slightly different because you don't have like the black outlines like you do for the original costume, so the eyes appear a little bigger. I mean, it's okay. I'm not going to say I hate it because it does lead to somewhere, but it's okay.
Well, I think it was interesting how they introduced it, because with the black suit, when it was originally introduced, and I'm sure you could give me the issue number.
I'm afraid I can't. But no. The black costume was introduced in Secret Wars.
Yeah, well, it was. It was Secret Wars, but I was talking about the first spot, because if I remember right...
Oh, and Amazing?
Yeah. Because if I remember right, Secret Wars, there was a whole period where all these heroes were gone for 1 month, and then they came back the next. And then they said, oh, here's where they were for that month. They were here in Secret Wars.
Amazing Spider-Man number 252 is when he comes back to his own title with a black costume.
I believe that entire issue had a Black Cat. Or was that Spectacular Spider-Man?
That may have been Spectacular, because I actually have a trade where it introduces the... I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, it was Spectacular.
Yeah, it was Spectacular. Like, Black Cat's in Amazing, but like when he first comes back, I don't think she's in that Amazing. So she must have been in the Spectacular issue.
Yeah, it's the Spectacular. I think it was maybe... Yeah, it was, I think, Spectacular number 90. I
honestly don't know, so I'm not.
I can't remember off the top of my head, but I know it's somewhere around 90. It's 90 or 91, but I just remember that issue because it's Black Cat running around trying to find Peter and making the mistake of going to Aunt May, even though she doesn't know that Peter's Spider-Man, and almost giving up his identity.
What an idiot.
hey, be nice. But Whoops. No, but... don't make me come through this computer screen. I'll give you a timeout.
He's done it before.
Yeah. But no, I thought it was really clever, considering that with the black suit, it came from a miniseries where he was on another planet. And so you really can't do that with an animation series. So you have to find unique ways to introduce it. And in this one, it was alien life on that was sort of caught a ride on the space shuttle. So I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, well, like give credit where credit's due. That was actually ripped off from the 90s cartoon. But I will agree that it's a very clever idea, because when you have an extraterrestrial alien being in a series, and then you have an astronaut, it just, you know, it just makes sense to have that come out that way instead of through a convoluted miniseries.
Well, it could have been worse. It could have came from a meteor, like the third movie.
Yeah. Let's. Are there any more movie references in this episode that you noticed? Cause I'm gonna get them out of the way.
Yeah. Well, with that, let's talk about our second character that I know everybody's been waiting for us to talk about, Black Cat. So, I thought she was a great representation of maybe all of the eras of Black Cat.
Yeah, I will say I really enjoy this Black Cat. I remember when I first did the review, it was exactly around the time where she first reappeared in the Amazing Spider-Man, like 606, 607. And I think this one was very this one did the character justice, because she was sexy and seductive, and she actually could hold her own and all that. She could back up her big talk, and I think that I mean, there's not really anything that's radically different from this iteration.
Well, she doesn't have the bad luck. Because in her first, as I stall for time, as I slowly walk over to my bookshelf to pull my trade so I can get the numbers right.
Isn't narration great, folks?
Yeah. When she first appeared in Amazing Spider-Man 194, I have it overdone, which I'm sure I did. But, you know, she had bad luck powers when she first fought Spider-Man, because spot is not a word unless you're
drunk.
That or a Trekkie. But but when she first, you know, there was a thing where he first met her in that weapons shop, and then the whole shelf of weapons fall down on him. And when he tries to land on the fire escape goes down and he falls, and it falls upon him.
Yeah. So would you rather have seen the black bad luck powers, or do you like how she was more just a practical?
Oh yeah, I definitely like this. You know, I think that if they had those bad luck or supposed bad luck, because as we find out later, she sets it up so that would happen later on. Until, you know, she got her powers from the Kingpin that gave her absolute bad luck. We're not going to get into that, because, again, that's going to lead us to current continuity, and I really don't want to talk about current continuity right now.
Oh, but we're going to!
I hate you. But, you know, I think her having bad luck powers would have made the character corny.
Yeah, I've never liked the bad luck powers, because just this saying bad luck powers is rather stupid, I think. I mean, it makes sense, because she's, you know, the Black Cat, and Black Cats are synonymous with bad luck. I mean, so that kind of makes sense, but I think it's always been like, it's barely been pulled off in the comic books.
Well, I never had an issue with it, because in the beginning, they explained that, no, it was her setting stuff up to happen, and
right.
Then...
That's good. That's actually kind of cool, but whenever she got bad luck powers, that kind of drove me crazy.
And yet, I didn't have a problem with that either, being that it was from the Kingpin. Or, excuse me,
Kingpin,
thank you. Okay, you know what? I'm from the South. I can't speak.
I'm from the South.
Stop taking my excuses away! But when Kingpin gave her those powers, the whole purpose was for her to cause bad luck for Spider-Man. So, and then she soon lost them. As with the story. So I never had a problem with them when they were in there, as opposed to now where nothing is explained in the fantasy fan fiction world of Dan Slott and Joe Quesada.
Ooh. Here we go. I would say that, to me, this Black Cat is Black Cat. This is a perfect interpretation of Black Cat. I didn't have a problem with anything she did. I have many problems with how she is currently in the comics, but I thought this one was very representative of, like, the really cool Black Cat. Like, because obviously she doesn't know who Peter Parker is or who Spider-Man is, and I thought this was very, very well done.
I'll just say this: every time she was in this episode, I just was standing up, going, "Yes, yes, yes! Thank you, God!
Oh God!" Yeah.
Not for the reasons that you're thinking. Like, they got her right! They didn't screw her character up! Thank the Lord!
You didn't like her having the Super Soldier Serum from the 90s show?
Let's not get into that.
Clearly not.
or the fact that she was the main love interest from the start of the show. Again, let's not get into that. Let's move on to talking about the Chameleon and his two accomplices. Quentin Beck and
Finest Mason.
Yep. So, again, you can say more about the Chameleon than I can.
Well, I mean, I'm not. It's not like I've read every Chameleon story, but I like this. It's cool. Obviously, it's because for those who don't know, it was later revealed retcon that he's like a half brother of Sergei Kravinoff, aka Kraven the Hunter, who will, spoilers, appear in season 2. But I thought it was really cool, because it was nice continuity that he was. I don't think mainstream audiences know that he's part Russian. And I thought that was it was so indicative of the fact that Rick Wiseman has pretty much read every issue of Spider-Man there is, and giving him like criminal henchmen that will eventually branch off and become their own supervillains. was really cool. I thought Quentin Beck was hilarious in this episode. I love he just randomly, like, after Spider-Man, like, knocks out the chameleon dressed as Spider-Man, he randomly shows up and says, "Jimmy Tall Spider-Man." Like, you would think that Spider-Man would, like, actually, like, kick him or something, but he just kind of sneaks up and does that. And I thought he was really cool. I'm not big on the Tinkerer myself, like, in general. I actually really hate him in the comics, but I thought he was fine here. He was rather harmless in terms of, you know, offending me. But I thought the whole thing was really, I thought the whole scheme was pretty cool, and I thought they were very interesting. I think that I want to talk about later how I kind of think their whole inclusion kind of distracts from the main plot. But I think as for what they were really nice. What did you think?
Well, as far as in this episode, because again, I don't know much. I mean, Tinker. All I know about Tinker is that he gave Black Cat her weapons that she currently uses. Quentin Beck, I know that he's Mysterio, but again, I haven't. Actually, my first introduction to Mysterio was he wasn't Mysterio in it, but it was him getting the Mysterio suit, which was Black Cat. Spider-Man Evil That Men Do.
Really? You've never read another Mysterio story?
That was the first time I read about, or at least of, a character who would be Mysterio. Because he wasn't Mysterio in there, but he would get the suit at the end of the story, if you remember.
Well, that would have been, that would not have been Quentin Beck then.
Well, I'm saying Mysterio, which we haven't gotten to yet. I mean, we're going to let it now, you know, he's become Mysterio in the second season, so I really had no experience to Quentin Beck, and the same goes for the Chameleon. Outside of knowing that the Chameleon could take anybody's identity.
And with first appeared in Amazing Spider-Man number 1. Wait, I'm sure you knew that.
Yeah, we're just going to say we did and slowly shuffle away. But I thought the Chameleon was great in this episode. I thought the idea that they had, you know, he goes to try to steal the ooze, but in stealing it, he gets an idea to parade around as Spider-Man was actually pretty brilliant for what it was, you know. I thought that it was a great use of their technology, and I was just laughing at sort of the corny versions of the classic Spider-Man lines. I did somewhat find it surprising that maybe they didn't at least try to do something with Captain Stacy in the form of him having a close encounter with death. I mean, they had the encounter where Captain Stacy fought him on the boat, but I would have thought for sure doing that, they would have tried to do something where, you know, Captain Stacy at least got thrown off a roof only to be saved by the real Spider-Man or something.
Why would you think that? I mean, like, it's not like Chameleon never killed him. That was a Doc Ock story.
I thought it was I'm thinking of the Ultimate Spider-Man. That's probably the reason why I thought.
Oh, okay. No, I see where you're going, because in Ultimate Spider-Man, he died because someone was masquerading as Spider-Man, and he died as a result of that.
Yeah, I was getting mixed up. I'm sorry. But yeah, it was from Ultimate Spider-Man, I was thinking. So.
Well, it should be known that in the comic books, Mysterio's return to the comic books, actually, like his second appearance, he did pose as Captain Stacy.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, with them taking a lot from Ultimate Comics, especially, like, Kong, I thought they would have... Yeah. I would have thought that they would have tried that. So, before we move on to our other talking points that outside of similar... Let's talk about voice actors. Mysterio was done by Xander Berkeley. Just to go over his voice work that he's done, because it doesn't differentiate. It just has all his work. And he's been in things like The Incredible Hulk, so that's how long he's been an actor. He was in Ah, Real Monsters. He did one episode. He was a Snarv.
Yeah, I remember that character.
He was in Gargoyles. He was Cold Steel.
Interesting. I've heard of the Xander Berkeley before, but I know he's been in stuff, but I can't place the voice or the face.
He was in Mighty Ducks. He was Philip T. Viper. He was in The Tick. He was Optocani. I'm just going off his voice work.
He's probably been in like some DCAU stuff, I think.
He's been in Superman. He's Sergeant Corey Mills. He's in Extreme Ghostbusters. He's in Wild Thornberries. He's been in Batman Beyond. He was Dr. Shives. Oh, he was he was General Brock in Justice League in the Aquaman episodes.
I guess that was Orm's right hand man, I think, when they like try to form a coup against Aquaman.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the episode where, they formed a coup against Aquaman, they wanted to flood the world.
Something like that, yeah.
He was Warp, Memento, and General Immortus in Teen Titans.
He was this and that, he was this and that.
Yeah. He's Sinestro in Batman Brave and the Bold.
Okay.
And he was Captain Atom in Superman Batman Public Enemies.
Okay.
Oh, and he was in Kick-Ass. So there you go.
Have you seen Kick-Ass?
No, I haven't.
Neither have I.
Tinker was Tom Adox Hernandez. He's been in he was in Gargoyles The Heroes Awaken. He was Lexington. He's been in Scooby-Doo and The Goblin King. He's done a couple. He really hasn't done a lot of voice work.
Hmm.
Oh, he's in Bleach. Oh, excuse me. He was Lexington in Gargoyles. And apparently he's been in Bleach, which... I'm sorry that... Oh, and he was in Witch. Okay. As a guest appearance.
So he's worked with Wiseman before.
Oh, he was in... Oh, he's in Family Matters. That scores points would be. He was Roger in episode 10 of the first season. Entitled False Arrest. But to move on, of course, we have the person everybody wants us to talk about, Trisha Helfer.
Trisha Helfer.
Helfer.
Don't call her a heifer. God, no.
But, I mean, she doesn't have much voice for, You know
I
what?
Think she was in I think she was in something recently.
She was in Green Lantern First Flight. She was.
That's right. Oh, she was. She was like Boudica.
Yeah, she was the evil. The
henchman.
It's been out for 2 years. It's wild.
It's been out for a few months.
So those are the. Yeah, if there was a Spider-Man movie that had Black Cat, I think she could play Black Cat.
Yeah. Have you ever watched Battlestar Galactica? I'm not.
No, I haven't.
Right.
But I was just looking at her picture on Wikipedia where she was in that dress with the scoping neckline. Yeah, she can play Black Cat.
Ooh, let me see.
Oh, great. Now I need to go find the...
God, I'm just Google imaging her. So that's Trisha Helfer, huh? Yeah, she can play Black Cat.
Notice that it was Don that said this and not me. I would just like to present that for the jury when time comes.
Also remember that Thomas actually edits the show, so, take that what you will.
Yeah. Let's move on to our fourth talking point that took us to think about. We have a lot of stuff to cover. Let's talk about the changing dynamic between Peter and Eddie.
Yeah, Eddie is like, oh, he took pictures again, did he? Well, F this dude. Yeah.
Well, I find it funny that nobody can apparently put two together. Wow, Peter was we know Peter, and he just watched them fight without calling the cops.
Well, okay, I can excuse that because he talked to Peter earlier in the day and knew that Peter wanted to see it. So he probably figured that Peter would probably, this is actually kind of something, but... I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that he thought Peter was on there on their way to view the ooze like he was going to, and found out they took pictures, and then instead of calling the cops, just stole the pictures.
Yeah, but what about Gwen?
What about Gwen? She I don't even know if that was I'm sorry, I can't remember. Hold on a second. I don't even know if that was Lacey Chabert playing her voice. Like, she had barely half a word. Like, did you notice that? He's like, oh, I hate Peter now. And then
she had half a word? I thought she had no lines.
No, like you hear her barely get the words out, but and then like he's like, "Don't try to sing it for me, Gwen." That was hilarious.
Peter had his chance.
It was so obvious that they did not have Lacey Chabert in the studio at the time. So she's like, "What?" Like, I think that was probably Trisha Helfer, if anybody. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, but I like how it's setting up what's going to happen later in this arc.
Yeah, now, well, this is the start of like this is the beginning of Eddie's like true. As we said for Harry, descent into darkness, which I've a ton of problems with, but we'll get to it.
Yeah. Let's talk about how the suit is affecting the way Peter thinks, because you're starting to see how it affects him and the choices that he's making. You know, because he has to think and you think, oh, he's going to return it, and then it says, but obviously it was the right choice, and you see him at home. And the same thing with him when he's talking with Captain Stacy.
Yeah, I think that was when he was talking to Kevin Stacy. That was obviously the suit, because apparently the suit talks to him in his own voice, and he I think Peter thinks that is him, but hey, it's not. Yeah. And I thought that was interesting. I mean, it again apes the thing where the suit negatively influences the person who's wearing it, and you know. I, as much as I love to blame the movie on that, that's actually from another thing from the 90s show where they took. And I always like that idea. If you actually read the comics, the symbiote is actually rather bland compared to the 90s show in the movie. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, and again, this is another thing where they're setting up what's going to happen later on in this arc.
Yeah. Like this whole this will probably really pay off in two episodes from now, where Peter's just like unlikable.
And that's the great thing. I mean, really, all of this started last episode, and so you really like have like 3-4 episodes of building up to this one point.
Wait, what? How did it start in this? Like, oh, do you mean like the whole shuttle
thing? Yeah.
Okay, I got you.
Which you agreed with me on last episode, if you remember. But let's talk about our final point for story before we get into our big topic that we waited to talk about, which is women in comics and sex in comics.
Yeah,
A great segue for it is, let's talk about all the sexual interlude in this...
sexual innuendo?
Yeah, interlude and innuendo. I don't care, but...
An interlude is sort of like an intermission, like something that takes the place of another thing for a period of time.
Okay, Doctor. Let's just talk about all the sexual action in this show.
Really? What did you see?
Oh, I don't know. Goop in my hair? That's one of those jokes where, like, yeah, the kids are laughing because, oh, you made goop in the hair. And all the adults are looking at each other like, did they just say that?
I suspect that the lines that will be categorized under sexual innuendo will also consist of favorite lines from the show.
You betcha!
Oh, man. Oh, boy. Okay. Goop in the hair. Check joke count one. Hold on. I'm almost there. Hold on tight. I don't slip. Not why I said that.
No, oh, wait! Can't say that line.
How's that?
Just say the hold on tight line.
Hold on tight.
People get it because I'm saying it later.
I'm
not saying let's talk about the lines now. I'm just saying let's talk about how much sexual innuendo was in this episode.
I mean, that's Black Cat, though. I mean, she's very flirty. She's very, she's very vivacious. I love that word. And she's, you know, she's very, full-on physical, so it would kind of be like it kind of is true to her character. Like, if they were not to pull that off, or if they were to kind of to avoid that would kind of be gutting the character, like they kind of did in the 90s show, where like, you know, you wouldn't have much of that.
I mean, it is part of her character, and it's what makes her character so fun to watch is the interaction between her and Spidey and all the sexual innuendo that seems to just ooze out between the pair. Wow, that sounded really dirty.
God.
See how fair and effective.
Now I
even have to take a shower after saying that. Whoa.
I was just about to say I just took a shower, now I need to take another one.
Yeah. But you know, that's how this pair works, and it makes the pair fun to watch. And especially considering that this, you know, is a child show. The amount just shocked me.
I would say it's all ages, but yeah, it has the majority of the audience is for children.
It doesn't stop us from complaining when the Amazing Spider-Man comics come out.
Well, no, because that you're getting me started. That is for all ages. And okay, you can have all the sexual innuendo we want with Black Cat, you know, goofing your hair, blah blah blah. But I mean, it's not like they actually like showing that or anything, you know. It's enough where if you're mature enough and intelligent enough to kind of...
I don't know. That little twisting of the wire could be taken as something dirty.
Wait, what? Wire? Like her jump line?
Yeah. Where they're hanging upside down and she's twisting.
Oh, it's your turn to sit in the corner now.
What? But...
Is that a... No, yeah, I... Oh, God.
But with that, let's segue, you know, let's talk about women in comics.
Because this is about comics.
Yeah. But no, but there's a lot of people that think that these type of characters should not be in comics. I mean, what do you say about that?
I'm not saying that, you know, you can't have sexuality in comic books. It's just, I'm just saying that there's a way to do it. And any idiot knows that there's a certain way to do it. You can't just, like, do whatever you want and expect to get away with it. But, like I said, I like this version of the Black Cat because this one is intelligent. This one knows what she wants and goes after it. She just met Spider-Man and she's interested in him, and you know she'll use him to her own benefit. But it's not like a whole. It's not malicious. It's not self-centered. Well, it is self-centered, but it's not.
I mean, what are you talking about? She uses him to steal a jewel.
Yeah, she does. Because she doesn't have a long-standing relationship with a guy, so we know how she is. It's not like she, I don't know, sold his blood or kicked him into the middle of a gunfight.
Well, you know, with women in comics, that, you know, first of all, let's just say that women in comics have came a long way from what they used to be, which was just eye candy, back in the mid, you know, 30s and 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm expecting you to take it from there since you have more experience in that area.
With the 40s and 50s?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, because, you know...
Yeah, since you're the one that was on that Women in Comics special.
Yeah, okay, yeah, with...
When Spidey Duke
Stella. Like, Walter Bonham's Burning Comics... blog and podcast. I was on there with
Spidey Dude
and Stella, and we were talking about, like, you know, we're basically talking about what we're talking about here, and we went over at first like the history of women in comics, where it was very different, and it pretty much mirrored the times, I think, was our basic thought on it. Like, if a woman was staying at home, then you have women in comics staying at home, not taking part of the action. If they were into the action, you'd have them do it accordingly, and if they were if there was a specific mindset that America had of women, then I think you would see that being mirrored into comic books at the time. And I think honestly it continues to this day, because there's a lot of garbage that really undermines women out in the media today. And I think that you see a lot of that, unfortunately, even in Amazing Spider-Man.
Well, what do you mean by garbage?
Let me count the ways. Keeping Up with the Kardashians, pretty much any the Housewives of Hawaii or something, like pretty much any reality show.
Hawaii, is that that's the next season?
Hell of a, I don't know, man. I don't watch it.
I mean, I don't watch it either, so I'm asking you. I mean,
the tanned and sparkly housewives of this county or that county.
Well, I don't contribute that really to garbage that our women are treating as much as, unfortunately, how it's sad how. Nowadays,
dude. I mean, like, I'm actually, because my mom does watch the show, and I'm like, as I walk up,
but it's reality TV, and unfortunately, I think it's sad that that's what's become entertainment. that.
Well, no, exactly.
Fantasy doesn't.
That is edited to be presented as an aspect of reality when A, everyone knows it's not, and B, it is done, and the way it is done puts women in a specific light that overshadows reality.
I think it's more of a long light that people just want to see people acting shit to each other. Like, my sister, who talks all about women's rights and everything, used to love watching, what was it, Flavors of Love, or whatever that Flavor Flav show was. And she used to love to see him catfight. I'm like, how can you watch this garbage?
It's junk food television.
I mean, it's first of all, it's completely fake them acting that way. I mean, the only reason they act that way is because, hey, if I act this way, I'm going to get more film time. Because that's all it is. I mean, I find more of the so-called upscale, appropriate, you know, women, you know, some of the women that are in, you know, some of these feminine groups these days are more bad images than the women in comics, more due to the fact. No, really, because more of them they're attention whores. They're about, oh, give me my 15 minutes of spotlight on me, as opposed to a lot of the women in comics today, like Power Girl and Wonder Woman and Mary Jane before, and Black Cat before the Joe Quesada ruining of Amazing Spider-Man, where they were, you know, they were self, you know, they were very respectful characters, you know.
Well, I'm not going to comment on how presentable feminism is to the female image, because I don't know that much about it, and I'm not going to say anything so I'm getting assassinated. But, well, okay, going back to comic books. Obviously, like, even to this day, people still don't know how to write women in comic books. And I don't care what you're going to say about this.
But at the same time, I can also say that a lot of times, some of the few female writers I've seen can sometimes have a problem writing males in comic book. I mean, look at Devin Grayson.
Yeah, well, that's obviously true. But, I mean, it's a disconnect. And
Devin Grayson!
Stop.
Grayson! Cased closed!
So what? No. Well, what is the case then? Women can't write men?
But I'm saying that it's just as opposed for a woman writer not being able to write men than it is a male writer.
And I'm not disagreeing with you. I mean, this is sexy comics, which adds men to the equation as well. You need two to tango.
Yeah, but
I'm saying that the majority of the people in the industry are men. So there is a specific viewpoint which is overshadowing more balanced perspectives.
But at the same time, I think it's more to do with the writer and how good the writer is. You know, if you have a good writer can write any character of any sex. A bad writer can't.
A bad writer is just a bad writer. It's not. One can write men and women fine and still be a bad writer. It's more along the lines of the actual characters.
But, you know, it's things like... I'm trying to remember. Do you remember the review that the Crawl Space did for American Son?
Well, which one specifically?
I mean, on the podcast. For the first episode where they were talking about the two girls that met Harry and Peter on the... like, what was it, in the park?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't get how that's disrespectful to women. I don't get it. I just don't. I'm sorry. I don't. Apparently, there's something wrong with how those women are written, and I don't get it.
Real quick, remind me. Was it the fact that they like walked up to Harry and Harry like immediately got their numbers or something?
I think something similar to that.
Well, I mean, I would imagine if you live in New York, you don't take strange dudes with red and brown cornrows as hair numbers immediately. I mean, I would just assume that because that's a freaky city.
Yeah. And
especially as someone who is
maybe it's just because I'm innocent and I don't immediately assume if somebody wants my number, they want to try to hook up and have sex, because Lord knows, I don't know why anybody would want to see me naked, but that's just me.
Okay, I stepping away from that minefield. I think that I think that. Just the fact that I don't remember exactly what was said, but I would imagine that since you have someone who clearly has problems, especially by the end of that story arc, you know, fancy women so easily, then it says something about the women. Same thing with Tony Stark. Tony Stark is a guy who has a lot of problems. He's a hero, but he has a lot of problems. And when you show him being so fast and loose with women, then it sort of demeans the women. Because what does it say about them? They are able to get with this guy who's so messed up.
Well, what does it say about the person individually? You know, having this thing where, oh, here are the women or a group of women that, you know, just easily go with Tony Stark because he's rich and famous. Well, that's not, I don't see that as a knock against women in general. I'm just saying, well, these three or four girls, that's how they decide to live their life. I don't see that as representing women badly, because that's not my thought process if all women are like that. No, it's just these individual people. It'd be no different than a guy doing the same thing with a female character.
Well, or, you know, you have a point. I mean, it is a matter of perspective. And I didn't think immediately think sexist when I first read it. But I mean, it's not like really good.
At the same time, it is more of a presentation. I mean, I immediately think that, and then not until somebody brings up, oh, I sort of viewed it as sexist, and then you start looking at it that way, and you start, well, are they right with that? But really, it is a matter of your first perception of it. And I think a lot of times, we have become predestined to immediately assume that, oh, this is how this writer thinks that all women are, when it's just not. He's trying to write these certain type of characters for the certain type of situation.
Wait a minute. Wait. That first issue of American Son, was that Joe Kelly?
Yeah.
Oh, it all adds up together now.
I hate you. I hate you.
Who brought in, let's
see. Okay, you want to bring in the current Black Cat continuity? Fine. Let's bring her effing in, okay?
Well, okay, Women Comics, Black Cat episode, I don't see why we wouldn't have.
Because I really wanted to steer away from it since we haven't gotten the third issue of the current arc in yet. Does it come out this week or next week?
Oh, I don't know. Ladies and gentlemen, sit back and enjoy the ride.
Okay, I don't have a problem with her sexuality. I have more of a problem with the fact that they brought her bad luck powers back with no explanation. Which is my larger problem with the current Brand New Day continuity, is that they don't explain anything about how continuity worked up that they're apparently going to do in a mint.
No. Okay. The thing with Black Cat, and I'm not gonna reference the thing I wrote in the crawl space because I'm kind of tired of talking about myself. Well, if you look at her appearances right around Civil War, if you look at her appearance in the Marvel Knights story,
and Heroes for Hire,
I didn't read Heroes for Hire personally, so I can't comment on that. Did she talk about Spider-Man and all in that?
They meet in the second issue.
Because
there's that point where the Heroes for Hire are meeting with Tony Stark, Mr. Fantastic, and Spider-Man in his new suit. I mean, I'd have to dig out the issues, and unfortunately, I have my comic boxes are stacked on top of each other, and it's like the third one down, so I really don't want to have to do any heavy lifting right now. Okay. But no, well, it's very much like the suit that she was wearing in Marvel Knights and that stuff.
Well, my thing is that if you look at Black Cat pre-Brand New Day, okay, post-90s pre-Brand New Day, it was established that after everything she's gone through with Spider-Man,
she still has feelings.
Yeah, she still has feelings for him. And the way she's been written in Brand New Day is strongly out of character. And by being out of character as a byproduct of that, she's written really badly. Not just out of character, but I think she's been kind of being written as this female tart who is just kind of misrepresenting women on the whole. Because Black Cat, like at the end of the day, Black Cat is a strong character.
Misrepresenting her, not. I mean, I don't see how it's representing women. I mean, you're not giving me
because her character is her character. She went from being a character to being like the archetype, the femme fatale, the one where, like, you know, she looks good, but, you know, don't touch it or you'll get burned or whatever. That type of thing where, you know, Spider-Man's involving himself with her, even though every sign under the sun says he shouldn't. And it's not because he shouldn't, but because she's bad news. And she's supposed to be a good person, a good character, but she's being written as this just nut-stomping who will, you know, say, hey,
I have to censor that word.
Yes, you will.
You're making me work, aren't you?
Hey, don't get attached to this, because I ain't, you know, I'll find whatever I'm doing. You know, she's, oh, I'll never go stay with you, Spider-Man.
Yeah, but
you know,
that wasn't Joe Kelly. That was Zeb Wells. I mean, you mentioned Joe Kelly, obviously, but it's Zeb Wells that's really done this, that's sort of ruined her character. Because, and I'll go through her appearances. Because she had 606, 607, where it was, to me, as, and again, and I guess we can say it's interpretation, but, you know, when they first met, she was trying to stay away from him. And then when they finally sort of had that up close where they ended up kissing, she said, and I'd have to go get the issue again. I'm too lazy to go get it. But it's the thing of where she's, you know, I have memories of us being together and things not working out, and I'm afraid of things repeating. I don't want to bring us down that road again. So you can see, though, she was worried about hurting Peter's feelings. Well, obviously she is. I mean, how else do you interpret that?
Okay, if she wants the good stuff, then why does she say to Peter, or why does she say to Spider-Man, I'd rather, you know, let's not get too involved, because, and then, like, says it in
but this is it, but we're talking about in the Zeb Wells arc. That's
no, now I'm talking about the Dan Slott issue, 6.1. She basically, you know, throws on the bus, you know, I'll use your body for whenever I kind of feel like I want to get off, but, you know, I'd rather not hang around. Like, she basically, like, says that in every context of the conversations.
And I took it at them being flirty and her not being serious, and that, as opposed to what apparently happened in the very recent issue, which was, I mean, barring a miracle happening in the issue coming out, I think it's next week, taken serious.
Well, dude, I mean, it's basically, she doesn't like Spider-Man. She likes him physically, but she doesn't
as
like
the
him.
Recent issue apparently introduced.
No, but this has been like pretty much said before the recent issue. It's not just Seb Wells who's saying it. Dan Slott, Mr. The face of Brand New Day Writers, said it. It was,
and, we're gonna take the Prince Clown of the Joe Quesada regime of Spider-Man as the his word about who Black Cat is. I'm sorry. Let's not. I'm not gonna. After some of the things Dan Slott has done recently, I have no more respect for him. I'm just. Let me get this out on the air right now. I have no respect for him. As somebody who constantly defended him, and Don can attest to that I constantly defended him for over 2 years, I have no more respect for him.
Whoa.
He knows where he can shove it. Because I'm sorry, you don't treat people like that. So, yeah, if he said that, I don't take it seriously.
Well, I mean, we're talking about the man's work.
And his work
involves continuity in Spider-Man. This is what we're going by. We're not going by him. We're not going by something he said to somebody else. We're going by what he's written to the continuity.
Yeah, unfortunately. But, you know, so when you're talking about 621, when you're talking about, I mean, are you talking about where she closed the door on him and used him as a sort of a source of distraction?
When I talk about 621, I'm mainly thinking of, like, when she takes, like they're jumping. And he's saying something like, we're not playing here. This is not a date. She says, oh, if I dated you, that would be a favor. And she, like, looks off to the side, like, yeah, I would ever date Spider-Man. And but that's basically what she said she wanted to do. And so, okay, they're sleeping together. But why would, like, what woman would put herself up through someone she wouldn't just to get off every now and then? Like, that's something that women say badly of men. So what does that say of her if she's the one to do that? Oh, an independent female character?
I think it's a matter of that they are trying to have their cake and eat it, too. They want to try to capture the fans who've been a fan of the Black Cat that was in Civil War and in the Marvel Knights, and even in the Spider-Man Evil That Men Do miniseries, which is where it all started, and yet they also want to portray her as that sort of femme fatale archetype of the 70s and 80s, so that they're so in love with that decade that they want to shove it down our throat.
Well, okay, that's probably what they're going to do, but my point is that because of that, as a byproduct, she's being written...
Yeah, right.
I'll say in a sexist manner, and is that, and by that point,
she's being written wrong. I don't know if I would take it as sexist.
I would take it as sexist. It's just stupid. I mean,
I agree with you. It's stupid.
She can be as butt kickery as she wants to, but if she's like totally not interested in Spider-Man, why doesn't she just up and leave the guy? Like, why does she have to like basically be like, if this was a man doing this to a female character,
but
no one would.
Yeah, but you know, also at the same time, and I think we talked about this before. The also thing that you have to understand that's also going on is that they're trying to show, oh, how awesome is Carly Cooper, which is, you know, I find that more offensive to women than how Black Cat's acting, because it's too. Here's why, because. With Carly Cooper being the main love interest to Spider-Man, the woman that looks like a 20-year younger version of Aunt May, and I'm very serious about that, you know, I feel it's more disrespectful in saying, well, you know, men don't give a damn about how you look.
Wait. Back the truck up.
I mean, you don't...
Repeat that. You think it's disrespectful to give the assumption that... Yeah.
Here's the thing, that he doesn't care how you look. You don't have to look good. You don't have to take care of your. And this goes for men too. You know what? When I'm going out with somebody that I really like, I want to try to look my best.
but so you're saying that Carly looks like is just shabbily and stuff like that?
Yeah,
I think it's just her hairstyle. Dude, were you saying this before she got her hair change?
When'd she get her hair change?
I'm trying to remember. I mean, because like obviously the first year of Brandy Day, she had like a ponytail and stuff. But like when you first saw her, were you saying like, you know?
I'm saying like right, especially right now.
But that has to do with the physicality of the character. First of all, it's just I think mainly
but
just
the yeah, but at the same
just flowing locks like Felicia.
Yeah, but at the same point in time. Part of comics is understanding why a character does a thing that they do. With that being said, how am I going, as a guy, and let's not talk about it, as a guy, how am I going to understand why a guy likes a girl when I don't see any redeeming qualities about her?
Because Carly is smart. She's, from what I understand, she's fairly nice. She is understanding when Peter, like, has to do something. Like, I remember that from the Juggernaut issue. So, I mean, like, these are qualities that I will agree are being kind of shoved in her face. Like, oh, Carly's awesome. But at the same time, it's not offensive because they're there. And it's not offensive towards women, they're there. They're offensive towards, you know, the readers by thinking we're dumb enough to buy this and constantly store.
Yeah, but that's my point, is that it feels like, oh, this pure... perfect thing. This is what you have to be to sort of get a man. This is what a real woman is like. And I'm like, no, that's not what a real woman is like. A real woman is whatever she wants to be. A real woman is somebody that has her own self of mind and bees and...
Okay, well, I'll agree with you. I'll totally agree with you that it is condescending.
Yeah, I mean, for that, that's the perfect woman. I'm like, I'm sorry, no. I mean, I want a woman with faults. I want a woman. I do.
Well, okay. Well, speaking as someone who's been in relationships before, like when you're in a relationship, it's hard to find faults with whoever you're with.
But I think that's pretty much. I mean, again, I think it's somewhat hard. We want to try to get a woman on for this issue to maybe help us with this topic, but.
I don't really get it. Basically, you're saying that Carly Cooper is offensive to women as how she's being presented in Black Cat isn't. Is that what you're trying to say? Like legit?
I'm saying how Black Cat... to an extent, yeah, because for Carla to be presented as so apart. I mean, that's basically the reason why they changed Black Cat, especially for this past arc, is because her whole point... I think it's Black Cat is offensive in the way that they're using her character. I don't know if it's representative of women. I mean, if you really want to be technical, there are a lot more... I don't want to say common marriage, but sort of those type of relationships that go on these days. So, again, talking about the times, that's really more of something of the times of people being in those type of relationships. But the ruining of her character, yeah, it's offensive considering how the reason they're doing it is to show Carly as this perfect person.
Well, no, but, like, Black Cat's always been a character who's really kind of, like danced the line between, you know, good taste and whatever. I mean, like, you know, like, just by the way, like, A, her how she's designed and how she acts. I mean, that's something that will always kind of get women up in arms. But her character going deeper than that is kind of what brought her back to being appealing. Now, it's just like, you know, I'll do whatever I want and, like, you know, I don't give a crap about whoever else. And that is just, like that's just... Again, that goes back towards the femme fatale quality where it's designed for the character to be attracted to her, but the overall, the undercurrent of what's going on in the story is that he should not be with her. And the fact that she comes out right and says this, and Peter's like, well, shucks, that hurts, like, demeans both him, and it demeans her, because that goes against
her. I agree, it demeans the characters.
And it is offensive to the gender, because Felicia...
But I don't see how that represents gender.
I'm trying to explain how it is. It's offensive to the gender because not only does it go against her character, but it relies on a typical fiction trope, which paints that character and that gender in a pinhole light. Because you have Carly, who's perfect, and Felicia, who's clearly not perfect.
Can we agree that they're both tropes that are offensive to... women?
I don't think Carly's really offensive to women. I think she's kind of, like, I think the term offensive is can correlate towards how she's using the story. I'm not going to say Carly's offensive to women because she's presented as appealing.
I just think it's offensive that, you know, to sit there, you know, oh, this perfect, this is a good woman. This is a good find. This is what every man should be striving for.
Well, are you saying? I don't know if they're saying like that. They're saying she's good for Peter. She's smart.
I mean, it almost feels as though they're saying, oh, all those women that are sexy, they're just whores.
Well, I can see how you're saying that. I can see how you're doing that. But that's literally how they're doing with Black Cat. That's what
I'm saying. Can't we agree that both are offensive to an extent?
I don't agree with how they're doing with Carly, but well, I think that both ideas that, you know, women who are nice like Carly as an offensive archetype is incorrect.
Well, with that being said, let's wrap this up. Let's go move on to our favorite lines. We actually had another maybe topic, but I'm saying maybe we'll do that for another time in sort of a special. If you guys really want to hear us talk about sex in comics, because I
really really want to.
Yeah, because that will take another hour, and it's getting hot in this room. So. Let's move on to favorite lines. Well, I know. Wait.
Oh, actually, I have some, but you go ahead.
Well, fine. I'll let you go first. But you can't take the nice ride one.
I'm not taking any Black Cat ones because I know you'll have all of them. I like the line where, we're talking about this cartoon. Where, he's like, you know, oh, you're Spider-Man? You don't have the right costume. I'm in mourning for my buried rep. I kind of like that line. And I also like the line where he's like, how about a taste of spider punch? Please don't tell me I sound like that. Or at least I'll better quippage. I like those two ones.
Those were some good lines. But yeah, I'm sorry. All the best lines were definitely said by Black Cat. But the first one I have is from Spider-Man. It's like, perfect. I stop a burglary in progress, get pictures of the bugle with me and a hot cat burglar, and slap my peepers on the ooze. Hat trick! number two. Oh, you better not get your goop in my hair. Don't worry. It comes off with ice or peanut butter. Lovely. Number three, it's really just a series of sort of back and forth quips between them. It's like, you want in on this gig? Take. These words are foreign to me. A certain captain of industry has offered me an indecent amount of money to steal the ooze for him. Something about its scientific prospects. You sure it was a full captain of industry and not some industrial cadet showing off for the girls? Oh, I know when a man's showing off. So you want to get in on this mud pie? It's tempting, but I'd have to turn in my superhero discount card.
That was a nice run.
Yeah. Later on in the episode where he first realizes he has the black suit and they're getting tangled in the jump line and web, I was like, so are we going to be bad guys together or just plain bad? And then he slipped away. Was it something I said? number five I have as, you know, when she's eyeing the cat, says, ooh, I want, she's like, cat, no door prizes. and then my last two are both on the jet ski. The first one is, nice ride! Haven't you heard? Crime pays. I'm not listening. La, 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 la. and of course, almost there. Hold on tight. Don't worry. I don't slip. Not why I said that. We're close enough. Kitty senses purring. Which at that...
that made me feel weird.
Which at that point, I'm out of my seat going, thank you, God! Thank you!
And it's all you, man. It's all you.
Yeah. I notice you backing away there.
I'm running away.
With that, how many ratings are you going to give this episode there, Don?
I liked it, and I think I want to up it from my original score on the crawl space, 4.5.
Alright. Gee, should be a surprise what I'm probably going to give this episode.
Perfect score.
Yeah, 5 out of 5, baby. I mean, this episode, for me, this episode's just so incredible, and it's definitely, like I said, it's one of my three favorites, along with episode 6 and... the Christmas episode, so where he faces the Sinister Six in the second season. So that's our opinion on it. If you don't like it, well, tough.
Or you can write in.
Yeah, if you really want to,
don't say tough like they don't have an option.
I mean, you have options, but we'll give you those options in a little bit. But first, we're gonna plug our other podcasts and. Our friends. Don, you want to go first with your other podcast?
Okay. Along with John Wilson and Bertoni, we do the Amazing Spider-Man Classics podcast. This month we had a special guest, Jeffrey Taylor O'Brien from the Crisis podcast, and he helped us go through issues, I think it was 9 through 13, and the first part of that should be out right now. And the other one I'm on is Clone Saga Chronicles, headed up by Zach Spidey Joyner. Along with Bertoni and assorted others, we go for the 90s Clone Saga, and we have a ton of fun laughing at it. So check those out.
Yes, and I have the Tokyo SOS podcast, Godzilla review podcast that I do with my friend Jesse Garrett. As of this recording, which is May 19th, we've like recorded 3 episodes of this at 2 this month, but as is recording, I've just released this past weekend episode 4, in which we talk about the American Godzilla, and it guest stars Scott H. Gardner and Chris Honeywell from Tutu Freaks. And here's a more of a shocker: we all actually like the American Godzilla. Wow. They're taking our Godzilla fan cards away as we speak. I also provide content for one of our friends, the Chef Podcast, in the form of Thomas's Prerogative, that Don is a big fan of.
Yes, sir.
Even though he won't leave me reviews of it.
I love a comment, I think.
No, you haven't. Unless you're Dale.
I could be.
Yeah, you didn't leave a review. But I do have two podcasts other that are about to start, one that's also going to have Don. The first one, which I'm actually recording this Saturday, is Hexcast, a Tarot Witch of the Black Rose podcast that I'm going to be doing with my good friend Lori Thomas. We're both fans of that, and we really hope to maybe open people's eyes to a comic that unfortunately gets lack of respect. I don't really want to go into it why, only because I Donald Mark here and his friends have been jumping all over me constantly about this subject, and I really don't want to start that again, at least not with backup. The other podcast that we're doing is the Capes and Feathers podcast that we will we will be starting in June. It's actually be hosted by our good friend Walter Bowman that we constantly pimp. And me and Don, and along with our good friends Robert Bell and Stella, will be on there, and we will be basically reviewing every episode of Justice League cartoon that came out in,
It had to be
2001, because you had the guest spot in the Static Shock. And Static
the show was out before the Static Shock guest spot.
Yeah, but Static Shock, I believe, started 99.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that the show was on by the time it was on a guest spot on Static Shock.
Then Justice League had to start in 98.
No! Don't try. Static Shock began in 2000. Justice League began in 2002. And then by the time Static was in its third or fourth season with Justice League on there, it was like 2003, 2004.
Okay. Well, we're going to be on that. Capes and Feathers will be out sometime middle of June, so check us out on that too. Of course, we have all our friends. We have Brad Douglas in the Spider-Man Crawl Space, who graciously allows us to post our episodes on the front page. So do check his podcast out.
The latest one. As of this recording, I put the latest
episode 9.
Episode
9 just went up this morning. Views from the Long Box with Michael Bailey. He's gonna have a new episode supposedly out this Friday or by this weekend. The Shaft podcast with my friends Gene and Chris. It's a video podcast, so really check that out, especially if you're into anime. The Major Spoilers podcast, who's now back after their site going down, along with the Critical Hit podcast. Clone Saga Chronicles, Batgirl to Oracle, a Batgirl podcast. Kaiju Cast, The Nostalgia Critic, 22 Freaks, DJ Thomas, and
I'm
just messing up. Excuse me, folks. The 2-in-1 showcase. All these people, I mean, these names, just listen to them. Type them into, like, Yahoo or Google, your search engine, and look for these shows and listen to them. And trust me, you'll have a good time listening to them. So, that's it. Don, do you want to tell them where they can find the show?
Spectacular Rhythms Podcast at podmatic.com. Also, you can leave comments on our forum space at thecomicsforum.com. Where you can do that.
Yep. And you can email us by sending email to spectacularwebs@yahoo.com. And do remember to leave us iTunes reviews if Don didn't say it, because I'm not paying attention. So that's it for this spectacular long episode.
Hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, just a bit of a warning. Probably when we put this up, we're going to take episode 1 down. I'll probably post something on our page about it. So what's going to start happening is we're going to start taking episodes down so we can put episodes up. So if you want past episodes, this is your last time to get episode 1. And episode 2 will probably go down soon after that. So until next time, Spider-Man fans... Today is just not my day.
Smell your cats. Living on the edge, body crying, spinning webs, swinging from the highest ledge, he could leap above my head. Villains on the rise and the city's victimized, looking up with no surprise, arriving in the speed of time.
Mondays, available the second Monday of every month at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.